Hello, everyone. Today, I'm joined by the regular crew. I've got my friends, Mark and Logan. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, doing Logan? Good. I was just thinking, I'm sorry, I got distracted for a second. I was like, you know what? We're talking about, you know, the possibility of t-shirts and merch a while ago, and I was thinking, we have the perfect t-shirt for at least us on the show. Is it just says the regular crew.
Yes. Yeah. Oh boy.
That's true.
I will make it's like in the font of like the regular show, but you know, like
those would be the crew jackets.
There you go. The
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tabletop Radio on the front and with the regular crew on the back.
I like it.
Oh boy. In the future, possibly.
Yep. Whenever we get merch, you know, and that's sponsorships right. And you know, other weirdness.
Yeah, hit us up if you want to do any sponsorships, merch, merch brands, just reach out to us.
Sure.
Today, we are doing something a little bit different, but not too extremely different. We are kind of dedicating an episode to a reflection, an RPG reflection that we do. Because we've been spending a lot of time in a particular system here recently, we wanted to kind of take a step back, separate it out from our regular episode, and just have it as be its own thing. So today we're going to be talking about Household, and kind of specifically, this one's going to be a little bit different, but kind of specifically about Chapter 3, Part 1, which is this flashback chapter for Dimitri.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's kind of, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is it's a bit out of setting, out of system to do like a full like flashback chapter, as opposed to like moments where you like just flashback and see something that happened from the past. But since we're taking a lot of inspiration from things that happened in these characters' backstories, I found it kind of fitting to go off book here and take a step back into the past. It also gave us a chance to swap out a character. Logan didn't play Radu. Logan played Zane. And I believe that's where things started out. We flashed in, we met Zane, where he was at the dining room table, kind of where he's from, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he was from the chandelier eventually, but he's spent most of his time down there. Like, he moved down be in a lower area because he wanted to be more action-focused and, you know, kind of, yeah, got lost in his comp work.
That old grizzled fairy.
Oh, totally.
definitely experienced beyond his years. I thought it was a really cool character to throw in with Dimitri, who's now, you know, at this point in time, that extremely green, very inexperienced company member, you know, recently joined within the last 4-ish years. But what gave you a little bit of inspiration? Why did Zane become Zane?
Maybe because I'm a little in Zane in the membrane. Kidding. I was trying to think about somebody who would be, well, obviously different than Radu. That's a simple take. But also playing in a lot of ways what we had talked about it beforehand. We didn't script anything beforehand, but we kind of, you know, talked about like expectations, which I think is normal for any roleplay group. We're putting on a show, so probably even more normal for us. about where we wanted to go with this and like what the point of the flashbacks were. And we're not going to reveal that here now, the fullness. So we'd like you to be able to experience where we're going with that. But part of what we wanted to do was give some look into the history of our characters. And so have a highlight on each of the main characters, and then each of us would be playing some other character to help focus that a little bit. And so it seemed to fit that I'd be some sort of like inspector as well. And it being back in Dimitri's history, that it makes sense, some sort of like mentor or somebody he had to deal with, which is where I was leaning for that, was like something that would be, that could fit as a mentor, but also not take the spotlight, you know? We want to not be completely everything, because again, it's still about finding out about our actual characters, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And on that same note, I think it went a bit more caricature-esque as opposed to a character fully developed, because I was trying to lean into certain modes. We didn't have a lot of time to see him on screen. And there's also a bit of a difference here. I'm playing a mentor character as a younger player than the player that I am mentoring, quote unquote, you know? So there's a bit of a difference there where I'm playing certain tropes and expectations, because I'm not actually mentoring anything. I'm just trying to show that, you know, show that relationship.
Yeah. I think I remember at one point in time, it was kind of like a passing of the torch moment.
Yes.
You handed over a weapon that was yours to Dimitri, kind of like a, hey, I see your potential. You're clearly doing very well. Here you go, to kind of aid you along on your journey.
Yeah. I definitely thought that was a passing of the torch, and I trying to, okay, so we've seen who this guy is. Now let's see how Dimitri steps into his own. But it was also kind of like a signal flag for retirement. You know, Zane's supposed to be this old grizzled guy. He walks with a limp because he's got an old war injury, you know, and he's a messed up dude. He's kind of covered in his job. He's just consumed by it. So not knowing where the story was going to go, if there was a chance for him to bow out or retire or step away, it just made sense that, you know, I started nodding towards that as well.
And we'll get over to Dimitri here in a minute. I know we're talking about Zane a lot.
No, that's perfect.
There was also a moment, well, it wasn't planned, it wasn't scripted. I don't know if you thought about this from the beginning, but there was a moment where you took an experience, I believe, called Not the Center of the Show or something similar.
Yeah.
Which kind of reflects that a little bit. Maybe he's like, he's seeing this younger, passionate, new inspector and is going, let's see what he can do.
Yeah.
Taking that step back. And
yeah, that was a lot of it. Let's see what he can do. Let's see. Honestly, Zane as a build in skills as well as personality is he comes in and he takes command as a character. And so how do I make somebody who is such an emotional powerhouse as well as such a spotlight character become the background, become the supporting character? And so part of that was, you know, me also trying to figure out how the experiences system works. I think it's still very interesting because it's very flexible, which is not always the easiest for my brain. So it's nice to have, you know, like to just be like, okay, well, can I do this? Can I do that? You know, can I play with certain things and see if it works?
Yeah.
And so that was a big part of it with, can that be an experience that I can use later on? And I think I did actually end up using it a couple times where I could upstage myself and make Dimitri the focus of the moment, even though it was my turn or my action or whatever it was.
Right.
That was the intent, at least. I don't know how well it came through, but
no, I think it came through well enough, at least on my end.
Nice.
Anyone listening, be sure to write in if you have any other thoughts. We'd love to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's shift a little bit over to Dimitri here.
Yeah,
the star of the chapter, shall we say?
I don't even know if you can really say star, but maybe focus.
At least narratively.
Narratively, focused. Yeah. This was, you know, this was. And I think we talked about this with, you know, both this flashback and one yet to come, this is very much about a, you know, how did you become the way you became, which is kind of the nature of any kind of flashback or prequel. And, you know, like Logan
was saying, origin story, so to speak.
Essentially, yeah, exactly. So as Logan was saying, his character became a driving force on Dimitri and how that would affect him. And it was interesting to kind of deconstruct your character. You don't see this in a lot of RPGs. We didn't do anything mechanically to de-evolve him, but just emotionally and, you know,
kind physically of and descriptively and
exactly. Narrative experience. He was, you know, kind of different, and playing that regression was really kind of fun and interesting.
Yeah, so we kind of started out showing that Dimitri is newer to the Royal Gendarmerie in the realm, and he is stationed in the piano. I personally just kind of on setting side of things, the way they describe most things is just gorgeous. Yeah. You know, we go from the description of this piano being a mountain range as a comparison, because these littlings have to many times climb in order to reach the top.
Yeah.
But seeing snails carrying baskets up the legs of the piano bench and the littling made mountain range of the ivory parin.
Yes.
Or the white keys of the piano that have been stacked and built upwards towards the piano itself from the bench. It's just gorgeous.
Well, I think that's one of the interesting things about the setting is all of the realms are have their own flavor. And I think the dining room especially deals with a lot of vertical access situations. You know, you got stuff up in the chandelier, on the window ledge, up the piano,
up in the cupboard
on the table. You know, most of the other rooms are mostly on the floor, but this has a lot more vertical areas to play with, which
absolutely,
you know, is kind of appropriate.
Makes sense.
It is the
airborne race, right?
Yeah, the race with wings, but still, it gives a very interesting kind of mountain flavor to a lot of it.
Yeah. So he's new to the Royal Gendarmerie, and we kind of go through this journey of these two people meeting and I guess their first experience working together.
Well, and we actually started, you know, we didn't really show his recruitment to the gendarmerie, but when we started, Dimitri was very much a paper pusher, you know, gopher. And, you know, Logan's character kind of came in and was the one that pulled him out of that. And, you know, that was kind of the impetus for his starting a very active investigative adventure career.
Yeah, and I think it kind of helped highlight the fact that he is overall kind of the same as he is when we saw him in the future.
True.
You know, he's always kind of been this way. He's always been curious and investigative and I guess a bit of wanting to do the right thing.
Definitely, yes.
And it just helped highlight some of these important moments that might have helped him become the person he is. Like we've said before, it's a nice moment to highlight those moments.
True.
I also wanted to experiment a bit with throwing some household lore in there, some actual things that have happened, tying it in with your personal story as through your mother.
Yes. Yes.
I wanted to kind of give it that feeling of Dimitri is kind of like his mother. in a lot of ways. You know, she raised him, of course, but you know, they were both that heavily investigative, heavily curious person.
True.
And I wanted to help show that with the journals that you had from her, and helping give him a bit of that information through her previous research or adventures or dealings with certain individuals.
Good point.
Any thoughts on this whole, it might have come through a little confusing.
It might have,
But what overall, I think what I was trying to do was introduce that his mother was a member of the Golden Circle. Who was a group of individuals that kind of were for the people. They would help people in need a lot of times with not much in return. Kind of a secretive organization.
Yes.
That maybe not a lot of people would know about.
Dimitri's backstory is kind of complex. You know, it's kind of hard to get too much into the situation with his mom and that background. But she was involved in this, which got her on the wrong side of the TriStar, and that ended up in her murder, which, you know.
Which was one of the actually in the book moments where the TriStar came through the piano and would kill a lot of littlings.
Yes.
Not very good terrorist organization.
But it definitely sets up those kind of triggers for the character, for Dimitri, you know, when you see those TriStar symbols pop up, you know, really great character moment of tension.
That's really important to this person. Yeah,
absolutely.
It really should show that they are affected by just even seeing or the mentioning of it.
Yes.
Yeah, you did a hell of a job with that backstory therein of tying it into those real world things. It's almost like you were helping Zach as a narrator be able to pull on that later on by just being into the lore yourself. Like that's cool.
Yeah. That was the goal.
Like so. I said, it's really neat. And it's a really good story overall. When you really get into it and read all the stuff that's happened, there is so much stuff in this lore.
True.
And I said, I didn't like crunchy games. This is lore crunchy, but
yeah,
you know. But it's really neat. And I was really surprised at how many situations that could easily tie into either of your backstories at any time. So kudos to the writers over here. They did a really good job with their history.
Well, and I think that's a key part of it in general, too, is that it's not just, you know, lore crunch, you know, so I'm right and I make sure that nobody's going to show me that I'm wrong. But it makes you want to look into it, and it makes you want to dig into their lore because it is intriguing. It's fascinating. It's a fun view on things. So that's also helpful too. You know, a lot of games are like, oh, you better know the lore because X, Y, or Z. But this is more of a encouraging too, as opposed to a threat.
And it's really neat lore. You know, I mean, you got the past lore, but even the stuff that's going on during the play is stuff that is going on during your adventure. It's not overtaking your adventure. It's not, you don't feel like you're not part of the main thing because something more important is happening somewhere else. It's just, it's something that you can tie in and weave into the ongoing narration that works really well. Yeah. It's a fine line to walk. I think that it really well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's almost like an outline that they have with the historical events.
Yeah.
So it's like this showing that this world is moving around you still actively as you're doing your own things, whether you're directly in that historical event or if it's something you just see in the newspapers and it affects you and the other people around you potentially.
True.
Where that's something I kind of am throwing in and out as this flashback chapter is happening. Since it's kind of happening in the past, that, you know, that next step historical event isn't happening currently, but I guess it's happening in the background.
True.
In the future.
Yeah.
But
this whole time travel thing is just too much.
Right. Yeah. No, it's really strange.
It's best if you don't think about it too much. Right.
Yeah. It'll absolutely.
Melt your brain.
But, you know, that's a thing that I've heard from people and kind of had a slight issue with myself, is feeling like that this world that you're role-playing in isn't, like, active and breathing and alive. It's just, like, you're playing through a scenario in this made-up world, right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you know, you don't do a thing, it has consequences, potentially. Mm-hmm. Whereas if in a normal RPG world, you might not do a thing, and then, like, the GM just doesn't give you consequences. And so everybody feels like you could just do whatever you want. No consequence.
Right. Right.
Not in Household, baby.
I think that's just having a robust world in general. Household helps aid that, yeah. You know, because it's got enough stuff there and it tries to make it more current events. But I think that also fits the proto time period it kind of represents in its fashion and its, you know, gear and whatnot. There's always something happening, and being in the know and being part of society is huge, particularly with a decorum score.
Yes. Where your decorum can be a help or a hindrance.
Good point.
Progressing things forward, we reveal a bit of the occult, possibly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's me. I got to run you through some occult stuff. We did the spider cult stuff. Okay. And, you know, now here we are with some bitter bloods. Mm-hmm. Definitely not vampires.
Totally not vampires.
But kind of teasing it as people are saying there's a sickness going around. But in reality, there's no real sickness. It's just one individual who happens to be supernaturally inclined.
Right.
What do you think about the whole bitter blood scenario throwing? I know it seemed a little far-fetched to throw both bitter blood and the Tri-Star together, but
well, once again,
here
first,
we are.
First of all, I kind of want to say one of the things I like about this system is the magic is all actually contract based. Mm-hmm. The whole bitter blood thing fits into a contract that is some sort of an agreement with pros and cons, you know? So it's supernatural. It's all supernatural, but it's tied into its own logic.
Yeah. It's the centralized house logic where there are these magical, mystical forces that you can make contracts with that give you these abilities. And so they're all, like you said, all of it is contract-based, which I love. It throws the confusion out the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes it so simple to go, you signed a contract, boom, you get these things, you get these negatives.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's the same for everybody, right?
Yeah. And, there's so much dynamic possibilities with it. You can do anything with it, but there's still this kind of common, this legalese that gives it an interesting grounding.
Yeah. I really like them. They're all really neat, and they also allow you to create your own. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make custom ones in the future after playing with a bunch of the ones, by all means, you can. Yeah. They give you the means to do that.
But I really enjoyed the way that this evolved and you know, coming at it from the point of view of a murder mystery and evolving into this kind of supernatural adventure, this vampire adventure, essentially. In a vampire conspiracy. I mean, it was like all kinds of layers to it, which was really nice. It's fun.
I wanted to make it less of it seemed railroady and like you're going down a path, and more of you're discovering things as you travel along and peel back the layers of this onion that is chapter three.
Yeah, I think it felt that way to me.
Yeah, definitely felt like that way to me as well. I would say that in a lot of ways, it's the vibe of the Bitterbloods connecting to TriStar is kind of almost like an Indiana Jones Nazis and cult sort of thing. Like, yeah, you know, they're the baddies and they do all kinds of baddie things, but like, what does that actually look like?
Yeah.
How does that actually play out? And I thought that was just a dope way to show that, because it's like, we know the TriStar happened and it ended. Why are they still a threat? Well, they still have plots, you know, that sort of thing. Yep. You know, there's still stuff going on.
And this one here specifically can't die. Yeah. Can't go get old.
Yeah, so. that's a plot that, how long are we gonna have to deal with that?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So even though it hasn't been that long since the TriStar have fizzled and kind of dissipated, they say there are still some hints of them around the house. People that got away hid out. Obviously, maybe went inside the walls to an old ancient legend of a village called Wallachia. Away from prying eyes.
Not any sort of...
Yeah.
It's super fun. Like, it was... Yeah.
I'm glad you all enjoyed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no problem with having some, you know, nods to things we already know. I mean, case in point, 7C does that all the time.
I was about to say, Spain,
totally not Avalon, you know, totally not, you know, England, whatever. It's the same place, Avalon, England, whatever, all the time.
Yeah, we're totally familiar with that concept, so 100%. No problem there.
Absolutely not. And it gives us that common knowledge,
yes, it does.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, oh, everyone probably knows something about vampires, so they're on Bitterbloods, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
so it's
it gives you expectations, but you know it's not exactly right, so there's still a little bit of that, you know,
mystery
around. There's still the mystery. I kind of know what we're looking at, but it can still throw curveballs at
me. Yeah, like a maze that walls move and you don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, like that.
And you exit realizing you didn't have to go through the maze to begin with.
Yeah. Boy.
It's, you know, it's classic stuff. It's fun. It's kind of corny. But, you know.
That's also part of it, too. Like, if it's all so serious, you know, it almost clamps down on your ability to have more fun with it.
Right.
You know? So, like, having it be a little corny, having it be a little, you know, different is just, it's good. I don't know.
Yeah.
Thinking about how we experienced this first part of chapter three, are there any things that you would change going forward, knowing more about the game itself? Me, personally, I need to learn that experiences are a thing as you do things in the game, and I need to hand them out as we play.
Oh, yeah. That seems to be... I have that problem with almost every game.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, especially when it's an active during gameplay thing. It's easier to do if, like, at the end of the session, we go, like, okay, what did we do this game?
Mm-hmm.
And it was easier to do it that way, but I'll get better.
Yeah. Practice.
It's a learning experience.
I think that's my problem with, like, inspiration in D&D. It's like, give out inspiration and people do good acting. I'm like, they're always doing that.
But yeah,
you just always have
inspiration. Yeah, it's like, when do I give you guys aces back?
Right.
When does that happen?
Yeah. New session. Reset. Good. Okay. Like, what do I do with that? I don't know. It's a hard thing, I think, for any system because you are so caught in the play of it that sometimes those sorts of mechanics get lost. I wonder if, like, that's where it's, you know, good to, not with our group, with a bigger group, to hand it over to, like, somebody else can hand inspiration to a different player, you know, when they think something's cool, you know.
That's the same
idea with
open
this,
the table, like, for those things. Yeah.
Like, that was cool. You saved my character. You should get an ace back. Everybody votes. Yep. They get the ace back. That sort of thing.
And even players, you know, shouldn't be afraid to say, hey, I just did something kind of cool. Was that an experience?
Yes. You do that really well, actually. I really like how you asked that, because we're all trying to learn the system together. We're playing, aside from the household, we're playing a lot of these systems ones or twos, you know. It's not
right.
You know, something where we're long running usually. And so having that little extra, like, hey, you know, is this how this works here? Very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also find that while running this for you all, I'm also running another game for other people outside of this podcast.
Nice.
So getting a little more of that hands-on experience with different people, too, mm-hmm. is also a very helpful thing for me.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because it does change. I mean, you can have the same... Heck, every story changes so much. You can have the same story with the same players, but different characters, and it'll run 100% different, let alone dropping it in front of different players. Like,
Well, it's great for learning a system. Playing with different players are going to bring different aspects of the game out, and it's going to help you learn different things for different groups that you can bring to different groups, too. I mean, it all interlocks.
It does. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, a nice hint for GMs out there, if you know, in this system specifically, they have that the Saga of Fragile Peace book that is just adventures, which I personally use for inspiration a lot of the times. It helps me understand how the writers intended for encounters to work or different kinds of things, and how they might work at the table. So take a look at those if you need to. They are wonderful. Not a sponsor, unless they want to be. As a bit of a teaser for Chapter 3, Part 2, we'll be seeing Radu again. Hello, Radu.
Hello, good to see you again.
And we will be meeting a new friend by the name of Jacques.
Oui.
And we might be experiencing a little bit of the upper floors. Ooh.
Which we haven't been to yet.
It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. in the bedroom, underneath the bed, they have the old Christmas lights from the Yule tree downstairs, just lighting up all of Beddingham. It's gorgeous.
It's true.
It is cool.
If you enjoy what we've been doing here with our household campaign, please let us know. We've got several ways to contact us. We can go over to Facebook. We also have recently opened up a brand new Discord community server.
We're
having conversations, discussions on topics, people just sharing random stuff. It's great. It's a wonderful time. So join. All the links will be down in the description. And gentlemen, I will see you all in Chapter 3, Part 2.